He carried a gun for good to protect the rest of us. You carried a gun because you were a street terrorist, and that's what you are. It is incumbent upon the court to impose the sentence of death. That is all. Take him away.
This is the Paying Attention Radio Program.
This is Speaker Newt Gingrich, and I'm listening to Paying Attention with Tom Duggan on WCAP, where everybody gets it.
If you want to be somebody, if you want to go somewhere, you better wake up and pay attention.
Absolutely. Almost lost my job again. All right. Let's get this show on the road. 978-454-4980. We're waiting on Craig Floyd from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund to call in. And then when he's done, I want to go back to the New Hampshire primary, because New Hampshire voters are voting on Tuesday. And I want to play a couple of clips from Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum. Also, I'm going to give an opportunity to anybody that wants to call in for any of the other candidates and extol the virtues of their candidate. If you live in New Hampshire, even if you live in Massachusetts, give us just a couple of minutes, because we only have an hour left in the show. We're working on a third hour. We're trying to get the third hour back.
You know, I need to scold you about one thing that your mother said last night.
Oh, God, help me.
You never, ever...
You and my mom being in the same room together is frightening.
Oh, we got along just like this.
Yeah, that's my problem. Yeah.
You never say the phone number here. You've got to repeat the phone number on a regular basis.
All right. 978.
Via your mother.
Holy.
All right. 978-454-4980 is the number here on the Paying Attention radio program on WCAP. So Craig Floyd, who's the president of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. Craig and I met about 21 years ago when I was dating his assistant, Robin, who I think is listening. I know she listens from Virginia. She's one of the most well-known real estate agents in the Virginia, D.C. area now. And she used to be Craig's assistant at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. So when my dad, who was a police officer who was killed in the line of duty, he was killed in March. That year, they do the memorial services in D.C. every year in May. But because my dad was killed in March, his name wasn't going on the memorial till the following year. So I went down early. I went down that first year, and I ended up meeting up with his assistant, Robin. We dated throughout the summer. So I spent almost the whole summer down in D.C. and did some volunteer work in his office. And really got – there's very few people that I admire as much as I admire Craig Floyd for what he's done. This guy single-handedly – and obviously he had a lot of help from a lot of people, but he was the driving force single-handedly to have a National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial – erected in our nation's capital. It's in Judiciary Square. In fact, if you're familiar with D.C., if you take the red line, there's actually a stop, Judiciary Square stop, where if you get off the metro and you go up the escalator, you're in the middle of the law enforcement memorial. And it is beautiful. A waterfall with these huge stone lions and two semicircular walls that face each other with, and on them are engraved the names of every police officer ever killed in the line of duty going back to the beginning of this country. Not the beginning of our government, but the beginning of the country. The beginning of people establishing sheriffs and law enforcement. I think it was like 18, we'll ask Craig what the real number is because I'm horrible with numbers, but I think it was like 1820 or 1720 was the first sheriff's deputy that was killed in the line of duty. His name's on the memorial. Hmm. My dad's name is on the memorial. We lost, I think, 170-something police officers this year, last year in 2011. All of those names will go on the memorial.
How big are the names, the typeset?
Big enough to see. I think a little bit bigger than the Vietnam Wall. Mm-hmm. It's a tremendous ceremony that they do every year. They do a candlelight vigil. And this is how I met the president last year. I met Eric Holder.
Napolitano,
which is a great story for another day. Mm. She actually sat next to me on stage last year when I was honored by Craig to be able to read some of the names of the Massachusetts officers that were killed the year before. And And it's just it's a really tremendous thing that they do for the families, and specifically, I think even more than the families, for the fellow officers of cops that are killed in the line of duty. A lot of focus goes on the families, and it should. The wives, the husbands, the children of cops killed in the line of duty. But it also does an awful lot for the fellow workers who have to then, after watching someone that they cared about and worked with fall in the line of duty, they continue to pick up that badge and gun every day, and they continue to go out and do that job. And through the Cops Organization and the Police National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Organization, not only do they honor the sacrifice of those that were lost by putting their names on the wall and having a memorial service for them, but they also provide an awful lot of help for psychological, physical, financial help for the families and fellow officers of cops killed in the line of duty. So we wanted Craig to come on. I believe we have him on the line. Is that right, Timmy? 978-454-4980 on the Paying Attention Radio program here on WCAP in Lowell. Craig Floyd, you are on the air.
Tom, how you doing, buddy?
Good. It's always good to talk to you. It's always good to talk to you on the radio, though, because usually when we talk in person, it's at the memorial and all the emotions are running.
That's right. And unfortunately, as you've just been talking about, the numbers this past year, officers killed in the line of duty could not have been worse. And I'm afraid in the new year, things only seem to be getting worse as well. 177 officers killed nationwide last year. That's what we reported at the end of the year. That's based on preliminary information. Obviously, we'll look at all these cases a lot more closely before we make our final decisions on the names going on the National Memorial for this year. But if you look at that number, 177, that's a more than 40% higher than it was just 2 years ago, and about 15% increase over the deaths that we had in 2010. Most troubling of all was the firearms-related deaths. We saw 71 officers shot and killed during 2011, and that's about a 20% increase over the year before. And those numbers just continue to rise. They've gone up now for 3 years in a row. And for the first year in 14 years, Tommy, we saw more officers shot and killed than we saw die in traffic-related incidents, which had been the number one cause of death for 13 years in a row. So the bad news, obviously, gunfire killing more cops. The good news, and really the only good news in our report this year, is that traffic-related fatalities were down about 10% over last year's figures. And the lowest number we've seen, 64 officers killed in traffic-related incidents in 2011, that's the lowest number we've seen in 15 years. So some good news there, at least.
Now, do you guys have any information as to why the increase in gun violence? I was watching the I was looking at the statistics yesterday from the Bureau of Justice Statistics, the FBI released, that violent crime in America is significantly down last year. And yet, when I got your report in my email, I was shocked to see that while violent crime in America, on the streets of America, are going down, law enforcement deaths and felonious law enforcement deaths have gone up.
Well, you're right, and that's unusual. If you look at the last 100 years, roughly, up until just the last couple years, the homicide rate in this country tracked almost identically with the numbers of officers killed feloniously each year. When the homicide rate goes up, the number of officers killed feloniously goes down, and so forth. The last 2 years, just the opposite. Homicide rate in this country has gone down rather significantly each of the last 2 years, while the number of officers shot and killed has gone up dramatically, 20% increase in 2010, another 20% increase this year. That's unusual. So the question, obviously, is why? There's a number of theories. Nobody has the precise answer, and we probably won't ever have it precisely, although as history allows us some hindsight, we might get a better view of things years from now. But I believe, personally, that we are seeing a couple things happening. Number one, technology and communications is allowing officers to respond to trouble spots, to crimes in progress, much quicker than ever before. So what that means is officers are getting to a volatile situation and confronting these violent felons head on as opposed to years past where maybe technology and communications weren't quite up to where they are today, and officers oftentimes were tracking down criminals after the fact. You don't have as much of deadly force confrontations in those situations. So that's one theory, and that came out of Los Angeles, actually. I was reading some comments by Charlie Beck, the chief out there, who made that point that, you know, why is it that more officers are being assaulted by criminals, especially firearms-related assaults? And he thought that the technology was allowing us to do a better job of pinpointing trouble spots, crime spots, hot spots, if you will, where crimes, violent crimes in particular, are occurring in high frequency, and thus we're saturating those areas with more officers and technology. Things like ShotSpotter, it's kind of an interesting phenomenon we've seen recently, where here in D.C., for example, we have these devices, more or less speakers, if you will, that have been set up throughout the city, especially in troubled areas. And when a gunfire erupts, the technology allows the law enforcement folks to pinpoint where the shots came from and then respond almost immediately. So that puts officers at greater risk, but it certainly helps the citizenry and cuts down on these violent felons who would otherwise perhaps escape and be able to do harm later on. Another theory is that we have a more desperate criminal element, a more cold-blooded, brazen criminal out there, totally lacking respect for human life, in many cases even their own. They could care less. And a desperate criminal who, I say desperate in two ways. One, doesn't want to go back to jail or prison, and most of these violent felons are repeat offenders. This isn't the first time they've committed a crime when they assault or kill a police officer. They have long rap sheets. So when an officer comes to arrest them, they don't want to go back to jail or prison, and they're desperate in that sense. Another theory is that they're angry. The economy has taken its toll. A lot of people out of work. A lot of people can't support their families. And they're taking out their anger on government and establishment symbols. And who is the most visible and vulnerable symbol of government in this country? It's law enforcement walking around the streets in uniform, driving marked cruisers. And so I think multiple factors, obviously. Budget cuts haven't helped the situation. We're taking away training, taking away equipment, fewer officers on the street, less technology. All of that is hurting our officers as well and putting them at risk because we're not giving them the resources they need to do their job safely and effectively.
Now, we've only got a couple minutes left, and I really appreciate your time, and especially on a Saturday. I know how busy you are during the week. The Border Patrol, when we were down there last year, 2 years ago, we got pretty close with some of the Border Patrol agents, and some of the stories that they were telling us that the media doesn't cover were just chilling to me, chilling to the people that were listening to these stories after the memorial service. Can you just talk a little bit about the heroism of, and they're all heroes to me, but I think particularly right now with everything going on the border, the heroism of our Border Patrol agents and what they have to face and how little support they're getting?
I would agree that, you know, we've heard so much about the immigration problem in this country, and that, you know, how can we keep illegal aliens from coming into the country, the drugs, the guns that they bring with them, and the crime, certainly, that they bring with them once they're across the border. So obviously our Border Patrol officers have a great responsibility, and they're often put at great risk. They're oftentimes covering areas that are remote. There aren't a lot of other people around, and as a result, there's not a lot of help, a lot of backup. When they get in trouble, it's really them backing each other up. And sometimes the numbers just, you know, are overwhelming. They're often outgunned by the criminals, the drug traffickers they're going up against. And this is a real problem for them. I think, you know, I look at the Border Patrol, I know just about every year, it seems we're adding one or a couple of their officers to our memorial. I think this year there were two Border Patrol officers that died in the line of duty, and we'll be adding them to the memorial in May. But you're right, it's a terrible problem. I was down in Pima County, Tucson area of Arizona earlier this year for a memorial service back in May, actually, and we honored one there. This is a concern to all of us, and I think it's one of those examples where we often take our officers for granted. You know, everybody's talking about illegal immigration, the problem with our borders, and we're forgetting about the men and women who serve in the Border Patrol, who put their lives at risk each and every day protecting us. I've heard of several instances, I recall, Border Patrol agents who literally lost their lives actually trying to save these illegal aliens who were actually trying to come across the borders. They would get in trouble in the water, and they'd have to go in and save them. And I remember one in particular who drowned in that situation. So, you know, there's a lot of compassion for these people that they display, but they have a dangerous job, and we should never take them for granted.
Before we let you go, can you tell us who is going to be the guest speaker at this year's memorial?
Well, as tradition has it, and we haven't confirmed it yet, but we certainly hope that, as in past years, the Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, and the Secretary of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano,
yeah, she loves me.
Will be joining us.
Yeah, she loves me.
Everybody loves you, Tom.
Yeah, well, probably the way she does. Listen, I want to thank you, Craig, for allowing me probably the greatest honor of my life, and I'm not exaggerating that, to be able to speak and read some of the names of the Massachusetts and other states officers that were killed up on stage with Eric Holder, with Janet Napolitano, with many of the police chiefs, including a police chief from here in Shrewsbury and Worcester. It really was one of the greatest honors of my life to be able to do that in honor of my dad and all of the officers and families. And thanks to you who allowed me to do it. I remember the very first time I stood there and said, boy, someday I'd really like to be able to do that. And because of you and guys like Jerry Flynn here in Lowell, I was able to do that. And I appreciate that more than you guys can know.
Well, you've been a great friend and supporter. Love coming on the show with you. I love seeing you down here at our ceremonies over the years. You've been a great friend and supporter. And you know, that was a special occasion. It was your father's, I believe it was the 25th anniversary of his death. And we wanted to make sure that, you know, at least on that occasion, we honored him and honored you with that special tribute.
Well, I'm always willing to help in any way that I can, whether it's passing things out behind the scenes or helping behind stage or whatever it is. You send us an email, give me a call. I'll be more than happy. We're going to be down there, and I'm going to introduce you to my daughter.
Excellent. I look forward to that very much, and love to see your messages on Facebook. I keep up with you at least daily, it seems, multiple times daily on Facebook. So thanks for the messaging, and thanks for keeping us in mind down there.
All right, Craig Floyd from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. I really appreciate what you do. I don't think this country could ever really understand what you've been able to do to get this going and to be able to help the families and the fellow officers of cops killed in the line of duty. I really don't think they get it.
Yeah, my pleasure, and we'll keep at it, and hopefully at the end of this year we'll be reporting fewer fatalities than we had in 2011.
God willing. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you, Tom.
978-454-4980. Timmy Bone Mill says we have to take a quick break. There's Shakira. God, I love Shakira. She lost way too much weight, though. I think I might just kidnap Shakira, not to have my way with her, but to force a couple of hamburgers down her throat just to bulk her up a little to where she used to be. It's just me. Chubby chaser, I can't help myself. It's just one of those things. Craig Floyd from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial, always one of my favorite guests. He comes on a couple times a year with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about the New Hampshire election, the candidates, why Paul is voting for Mitt Romney. If you want to call in and promote your candidate, you are free to do so. 978-454-4980 here on Paying Attention. Where everybody got to?
I'm WCAP's Kim Saltmarsh at large. Let's take a look at what made headlines this week. State police say Lieutenant Governor Timothy Murray's car was traveling 108 miles an hour in the moments before it hit a ledge and flipped last November. The police report also says Murray may have briefly nodded off and wasn't wearing a seatbelt at the time of the crash. Murray, who was ticketed for speeding this week, says he takes responsibility for the accident, which left him with only scrapes and bruises. It could soon cost MBTA riders more to ride in and around the Bay State. An MBTA panel met this week with proposals for fare hikes of as much as 43%, along with service cuts, as the transit agency works to close their budget gap. If approved, the fare hikes would be the first for the T in 5 years. And in the shadow of a Mitt Romney Iowa caucus win, all eyes are now on New Hampshire. The New Hampshire primaries are on Tuesday. For WCAP, I'm Kim Saltmarsh at Large.
This is Wilfredo LaBoy, and I'm a listener to the Paying Attention program.
He carried a gun for good to protect the rest of us. You carried a gun because you were a street terrorist, and that's what you are. It is incumbent upon the court to impose the sentence of death. That is all. Take him away.
This is the Paying Attention radio program.
Welcome back.
978-454-4980. I've been able to maintain my job. Thanks to Timmy Bowman. I owe Timmy Bowman my job now at this point. I left my microphone on during one of the breaks, and I slipped and said a bad word. Timmy caught it on the rebound. He caught it on the dump delay button. Appreciate that.
What was that Eric Holder? Was that the word?
Yeah, exactly. That guy.
Timmy's a good defensive player.
I'm always psyched when Craig Floyd tells me that a piece of dirt like Eric Holder is going to speak at the police memorial. Because I love to see how uncomfortable Eric Holder, who hates police officers, is when he's standing in a sea of 35,000 uniformed police officers and families of cops killed in the line of duty. It is awesome to watch him just squirm.
He must know that half of those officers want to take him out back.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the safest place in the world for him or the least safe place in the world for him when he speaks. Because most of those cops are carrying weapons, but... Eric Holder and Janet Napolitano, I refused to shake Holder's hand when he came over and tried to shake my hand at the memorial. I didn't really yet have the venom and hatred for Janet Napolitano at the time. So not only did I speak to her, but I had my picture taken with her, and she sat next to me, and we chatted a lot afterwards. And we actually had a little bit of I don't know. What would you call it? A kerfuffle? What would you call it? I don't know. Still
a chat?
Jim Browdy's word. Yeah. We actually kind of had like a little chat because she couldn't go anywhere. When the ceremony was over, we were on stage, and there's so many people in front of the stage, you kind of have to wait until there's room to leave. And I turned to her and I said, if you don't strengthen the borders, if you don't stop the flow of illegal aliens coming in from the border of Mexico, we're going to need to build a third wall to handle all of the police officers who are being killed in the line of duty down south, not just the Border Patrol, but the local officers. Once these illegals get into the cities, we're gonna need more walls. And she was having none of it. Like, she was as respectful as she could. I'll give her that. She wasn't disrespectful at all, but she certainly was having none of it at all.
Question is, were you respectful?
I was respectful. I know most people would probably be shocked by that. I was a little shocked by it myself. But I was there for a reason. I was there for my dad. And I did not want to disrespect Craig Floyd, who allowed me on the stage, or Jerry Flynn, whose place I took to speak on stage. And I also didn't want to screw it up for myself to be invited back, because at some point I might get invited back, and I don't want them to go, yeah, but when he was here, he made trouble with Janet Napolitano. We don't want him back. So, I was very respectful, but I very respectfully let her know that as the son of a slain cop, I am horrified that those politicians who don't know what it's like on the streets and don't know what it's really like on the border are on ideology, killing police officers with their ideology and with their policies. Not on purpose, I'm sure, but if they don't get a handle on the border, we're going to lose a lot more officers. And she certainly was respectful, but certainly was also not having any of it.
You wanted to just make her aware of this, whether she agreed or not.
Yeah, because it was one of those things where it was a perfect opportunity. I may never get that chance again. And maybe, who knows, a year later, something will happen and she'll remember what I said. Might not even remember who said it, but remembered what I said. Maybe it'll click and maybe she'll do something.
You never know where seeds are planted and when they're watered.
Yeah, that's right. 978-454-4980. So,
gotta write a song about that.
Yeah. Sounds like a great idea.
What do you got?
So, Paul, I was at the Rick Santorum event on
Thursday.
Thursday night, thank you. I always need help with numbers and days because I just can't remember them. Timmy, we're going to start with, if you look in that clip folder, it should be one of the first three or four. It's 018. Oh, he's gone. Where'd he go?
Timmy,
in the back of his girlfriend. All right,
what do you know?
We'll filibuster for a couple
minutes. Let's filibuster.
I was at the Rick Santorum event on Thursday night with Christine Morabito, president of the Greater Boston Tea Party, and congratulations to her for getting elected, replacing Kristen Varley, who moved to Ohio. We certainly miss Kristen Varley, but she is going to continue writing for the Valley Patriot, which is great. By the way, according to Fox News today, Valley Patriot, the largest Tea Party newspaper in America.
Now, Fox News, not the television news.
Online.
Online. Okay.
And not the local Fox 25 news. I mean Fox News, like the Fox News. I'll post that story. I just haven't had time because we're on the air. I'll post that story on Facebook as soon as we get off the air. So where was I? Oh, yeah. So we went to Thursday night to Rick Santorum. I really wanted to like Rick Santorum. I wanted to like him. I agree with a lot of where he stands. He could be the nominee. He could be the president. And I wanted to see firsthand who it is that, you know, this Rick Santorum guy is. And I have to tell you, I was tremendously disappointed. He was not on his A game. Maybe he was tired from Iowa. But he was awful. No, he was boring.
When you say, Tom, that he was not on his A game, do you mean his manner of speaking? Do you mean his demeanor?
All of it. He was very confusing in the way he tried to explain things. Now, I consider myself a reasonably informed guy when it comes to politics. He started talking about level-based budgeting, and he lost me in the first – he lost me at hello.
Well, maybe that's a topic that just he had to explain, but it was obviously boring to me.
He also wants to regulate the internet, where he completely lost me, and I think got Paul's vote.
Yes. Well, right? He already has my vote.
The clip is going to be 1, 2, 3, 4. It's the fifth one down. It's 01AA Santorum, Tim. He also said something I thought was – interesting, and I think I also agreed with it. I think, really is the family values candidate.
Yeah.
If you're a liberal, you hate that. If you're a conservative, yes, you probably like it. He was funny toward the end, but throughout most of his talk, I fell asleep. I mean, I think even Christine Morabito said she wanted to check her email through most of it.
Yeah, she did. Well, before we put on that clip, let me just say that I saw Rick Santorum up at the College of St. Mary Magdalene, where I work. About a month ago, he came up. And granted, it was probably a smaller crowd than what you experienced the other night. But he was very lucid. Seemed to be he answered the questions very directly and very clearly. So I didn't get that problem. So it might be, A, that he's exhausted from everything that he's gone through.
Yep.
And B, maybe he's a little perhaps deer in the headlights to all of the vultures in the media that are surrounding him in the past week.
Yeah, because now he's relevant.
Now he's relevant, and now here they come.
Right.
I mean, gosh, if you think Venom was directed towards Romney or Gingrich, just wait until they get to the family values guy.
Yeah, yeah. I was listening to part of this clip. It's a long clip, but we're going to play a little bit of it. This is Rick Santorum at Wyndham High School Thursday night.
We don't need to focus and talk about the importance of the family. I'm not saying the federal government needs to do something, but a president can still do something by engaging America in a conversation. I'll give you an example. I guess it was last week, I was on a radio show. And, well, let me step back one step further. I talk about the importance of marriage and the family for the economy, because it is important. And I said, there was a Brookings study that I cited. Got a little heat, how dare we talk about these things. 2009 Brookings Institute, which is a liberal think tank, and they did a study on poverty. And here's what they found. That if you do three things in your life, if you do three things, you're almost guaranteed not to be in poverty. What are those three things? One of them is obvious. Work. Right? Work. Second, graduate from high school. Third, if you're a man, get married. If you're a woman, get married before you have a child. If you do those three things, according to this study, the incidence of poverty of people who do those three things is 2%. The incidence of people who do that, who have incomes over $50,000 a year, and this was 3 years ago, if you do those three things, the chance that you will earn over $50,000 a year is 77%. If you don't do any one of those three things, not all of them, if you don't do any one of those three things, the chance that you will earn over $50,000 a year is 4%. And the chance that you will at some time be in poverty is 74%. Now, What's wrong with the President of the United States going out and talking about it? How important it is to do those three things? Have you ever heard...
That's good to me. So, yeah, go ahead.
I just need to say amen to that.
I thought about you the second he said it.
So important.
Yeah.
I mean, everything he just said makes sense, whether you're an atheist, whether you're a religious person, whether you're a conservative, whether you're a liberal. How can you disagree with what he just said?
Three things he said. Work, graduate high school, and if your man get married, and if you're a woman get married before you have a child. If you do those three things, you have a 2% chance of ending up in poverty. If you don't do any of those three things, you have a 77% chance of ending up in of living in poverty.
And that explains me.
Yeah, well, you're not married.
I'm one of the
You don't have kids.
Yeah,
I mean, you don't work. The only thing you got going for you is you never left school. Paul's one of those guys that went to high school, went to college, and never left college. He's still in college, except now he's teaching. He's never gone into the real world. But I thought it was interesting that a candidate for president would be, especially at the height of his popularity, and I think he's peaking, would be talking about these kinds of issues, especially in a state like New Hampshire.
The way I look at it, and obviously I'm in the minority in the state of Massachusetts, but even if Rick Santorum goes nowhere, just the fact that he has all this media attention and he's in the spotlight, he has a message that is very rarely, if not virtually nil, that ever gets through the media, that is going to get through the media right now. And I'm excited about that.
Are you really? But you're not voting for him.
You know what?
Well, I tell you, I am voting for him.
Wait.
I'm waiting.
Yesterday you were voting for Romney.
Well, it wasn't yesterday. It was last week.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, that changes it. Last week you were voting for Romney.
Actually, that changes a heck of a lot. My article, my column on the Valley Patriot coming out this week, the January edition, says that that this is being written the day before the Iowa caucuses. And it was. And I said, at this point, even though Santorum is my guy, I support Mitt Romney.
Yes.
Then Iowa happened. The day after Iowa, I changed my mind. Right now,
do I have to change your column now?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, because I said at the beginning of the column, it might change with the Iowa caucuses, but...
You don't want to amend it before we go to print?
No.
You're free to amend it before we go to print.
Oh, I am?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh.
As long as you keep it the same length, if you want to add something, take something out, yeah, you can do that.
All right, I'll think about that.
Yeah, I think the readers need to get as up-to-date of Paul Morano as we can get, anybody as we can get.
But I was a Romney guy up until Iowa. Now I'm a Santorum guy.
Yep.
But I can easily go back to Romney if I think Santorum doesn't have what it takes to beat Obama. And that's why I was for Romney.
Mark, where are you? Where are you on the presidential race? The Massachusetts election is going to be in March.
I want to see how Santorum holds up to being pursued and dogged. I want to make sure that these opinions that he's giving right now comes from the heart.
I definitely think they come from the heart. I just don't know if he has the gumption to fight back the media.
Right.
He's too nice a guy.
I want to see his depth on it.
Yeah. I don't want a nice guy. I don't think I could vote for Santorum unless he makes the primary. But I don't want a nice guy.
Oh, he's not. He's not too nice. Do you remember during the debate so far? He's attacked.
He's been
in a relatively respectful way.
He's been tough in a kind of pansy kind of way.
Oh.
Yeah, I think he is.
I would say between him and Newt, but I wanted to make a point on this, whereas Santorum, he put it into proper context,
which
is so important. He said to talk about it, because your president is an example to the nation.
Right.
And he's talking about proper morals, factually based in context, and that is so important. And
so
of course
important.
I would say with the education thing, he does have a little bit of thing, because he can dismantle half of those lazy do-nothing people at the Department of Education.
This is why I'm excited about Santorum, and again in the state of Massachusetts, Commonwealth of Massachusetts, I know that I'm in the minority, but he gets it. He understands that the economic problems and all of our problems that stem from that is based on social problems.
Right.
It's based on a bad foundation. When you have a lousy ground, you can't plant good plants.
Right.
They just don't grow properly.
All right, we got another clip. Let's start with the first clip in that clips folder, the first clip, and then we'll talk about that. We'll go to the second clip. Hopefully we won't run out of time. We've got about 12 minutes left. This is from Newt Gingrich. Now, we went to Newt Gingrich last night. I was honored that he accepted the Valley Patriots endorsement, honored that Fox News picked up the story that we endorsed him, which is fantastic. I'll post that on Facebook when we leave the show. Here is Newt Gingrich last night on Mitt Romney. I think he's on point.
I came here tonight to ask for your vote, to ask for your help with all of your friends. We have 4 days. There's a poll that just came out that said 63% of New Hampshire is undecided, and 20% have said that they will decide on primary day. That fits my experience. I mean, I see all these polls. This state's not like any other state. I mean, all these polls where people say, well, Romney's way ahead, and Gingrich is here, and Huntsman's there. That's just people in New Hampshire pulling their leg. I mean, I had a guy get up at a town hall meeting yesterday and said, I always tell them a different name every time they call. He said, I'm just trying to keep them off balance. So I would ask you to think about a very simple model. I believe that I can defeat Obama in debate decisively.
Yes. I agree with that.
I believe, as I have in 1980 and 1994, I can design a campaign for the fall that carries the House, carries the Senate, and establishes an agenda that gives moral authority for us to change Washington in a decisive way. With no disrespect to my competitors, I don't believe a one of them can do either one. I don't think a one of them can do it. I'm not saying this to be negative. I'm saying it because you know and I know they have super PACs that will spend millions trashing them. And so I've decided the only honorable answer is to tell the truth with clarity. I'm not going to engage in my negative nasty ad to match their negative nasty ad, but I will engage in great clarity. I am dramatically more conservative than Mitt Romney. Yeah. I am prepared to defend conservative principles. I am prepared to defend conservative appointments. And I'm prepared to defend conservative policies. And I do it from a lifetime of work, going to my first Goldwater organizing meeting in 1964, meeting with Governor Reagan for the first time in 1974, and having done everything I knew how to do to help create a viable Republican Party across this country for my entire lifetime. I would like to have your help. I hope you will talk to your friends and neighbors. I don't have their kind of money, but if I have you as supporters, I can have human beings who offset every vicious negative ad, and together we can assist on the truth. Let me take some questions.
Just bounce that up to the next clip because we're running out of time, if you can. It's the second clip. And then we'll chat a little bit if we
There's
can.
A huge difference between a Massachusetts moderate who campaigned on a no-tax increase pledge and raised taxes $730 million and a genuine Reagan conservative who fought for the 81 tax cuts, who fought for tax cuts in the 90s, who opposed Reagan's tax increase in 82, opposed the Bush tax increase of 90, opposed the Clinton tax increase of 93. If I look you in the eye and I tell you I'm prepared to go to Washington, I'm prepared to veto any tax increase, I'm prepared to insist on fighting for tax cuts to create economic growth, and I'm prepared to fight for a budget that is genuinely balanced within a very few years, you have a practical reason to believe me. I've actually done it. I am the only candidate in this race who has actually changed major processes in Washington, D.C. You know, I'm not saying that other people aren't competent in many ways, but the truth is, Governor Romney accommodated Boston a lot more than he changed it. And the things he did in Boston were a lot more traditional Massachusetts politics. They weren't fundamental change. One of the reasons, if you watch the talking heads, that they are terrified that I'll be the Republican nominee. It's real simple. I actually intend to change Washington.
That's good. All right, so I saw Paul Ewan nodding no when he said that he's more conservative than you think that Mitt Romney's really more conservative than.
I know you and Mark are going to disagree, but I don't see much difference between them, to be honest with you.
Really?
I think that everything that Newt points to is Mitt's dealing with a Democratic legislature in the most Democratic state in the Union, Massachusetts. I mean, if Mitt was here as governor, if Newt was here as governor, I don't know if he'd be all that different.
Well, I think if you look at the contrast. Newt Gingrich was Speaker of the House under a Democrat president with a Democrat Senate. And they had to, you know, they were in the same environment at a different level, but they were in the same type of environment where the liberals were in control.
Well,
Romney was here. Romney was here as governor with a Democrat Senate and a Democrat legislature.
In 1994, when Newt gained his popularity and power with the Contract for America, it was a Republican Congress that enabled him to do what he needed to do.
With a Democrat president and a Democrat Senate.
Was it a Democrat Senate? I thought both houses were the Senate and the House.
I thought the first 2 years it was split, and then the second 2 years it was all Republican.
Yeah, the second 2 years was 94 to 96.
Right.
And that's when the Contract of America came, and that's when Gingrich was able to do something.
All right.
So I think that's a huge contrast. I don't think when you're in a position, you've got to compromise with the other side.
Yes.
Newt has done a lot of that. So I don't see there's much. I think the biggest difference between all three candidates is Santorum. I think he's the most
I would say that Romney could have done things, especially on my ground level. Romney could have addressed, like, the education. It's nonpartisan. It's not a Republican or Democrat issue. He could have done something about education. He wouldn't do it. I think he was just marking time until he found something better.
He stopped being governor halfway through his term.
The issue wasn't a Democrat or a Republican legislator. The issue was he didn't care enough to get off his butt and do anything.
Well, that's a judgment call. I'm not sure if we can verify
that. I want to take a call because we only have 3 minutes left, but I just hope. And Romney might end up being the next president. I would not be unhappy with a Mitt Romney as president. I really wouldn't. I like Mitt Romney. I just like Newt Gingrich better. I just wonder, though, if he becomes the president, if he's not going to pull the same thing that he pulled here in Massachusetts, where he's going to say, I didn't raise any taxes, but he's going to raise fees on everything. Like, everything's going to become more expensive, just not call it a tax. 978-454-4980. You're on the air. You've got 2 minutes.
My question is, what would Romney be if he had a Republican Congress?
Yeah, that was my point.
You know, and the next question is, I like Newt, but I just don't like his what he wants to do on illegal aliens. He wants amnesty.
No, he doesn't.
Well, he says it in a nice way.
Well, it's not amnesty. What he's saying is that there's a small segment of the population that he would let stay as residents, but they would not be citizens, they would not be allowed to vote, and they'd have to pay a penalty.
So isn't everybody else, but that will end up where they won't pay a dime, because who's going to pay $5,000 as of, you know, all this other stuff?
Right, but
they're
going to
end up as though it's a complete amnesty, and they're going to say, the heck with it, but from now on, we'll enforce the laws, which won't happen because it didn't happen with Reagan. It won't happen with this administration. And 20 years from now, we'll have the same problem.
All right. I appreciate the call. We're up against time.
Okay.
I only have one question for everybody listening, including the two guys in the studio. Does anybody believe that Mitt Romney or any other candidate is going to send every illegal alien home? I think the difference is Newt is being honest by saying, and I think he's going to have to say, I think he's going to have to do it, that I'm going to allow some people to stay because he's going to have to work with the Congress to get it done. I mean, no, the president can't just get into office and go, okay, everybody leave. Let's round them up and send them home. You're going to need policies. You're going to have the support of the Congress and the Senate.
I don't even think Newt is being honest when it comes to that.
Really?
Yeah, when he gets into office, he's going to round up the 95% of the people that he wants to round up and send them home?
Yeah, I think he will at least make that an effort.
Oh, I don't know if that's possible.
But is there really anybody out there who thinks Mitt Romney's going to send everyone home?
I say I don't believe both of them.
But at least Newt is saying that he's going to let some people stay. And he's at least being honest.
I don't think he is.
And by the way, I agree with him. I know I'm in the minority, but I agree with him. I think if you have a border wall, if you have the National Guard on the border, patrolling our border, if you make English the official language, if you stop mass deportation starting with criminals, people in jail, people with criminal records, people causing problems on the streets, people on welfare, people on the public dole. And then once you've done all of that, if there's a small segment of the illegal demographic that's here who's not causing problems,
yes,
you want to let them stay, make them pay a penalty. I have no problem with letting a kid who was brought here against his will at 2 years old by his mother.
That's a show all in and of itself.
Yeah, it is.
We don't have enough time for that.
Whoever you vote for, please vote on Tuesday. Paul, last word?
My last word is this. If you want somebody who has the best chance of beating Obama, vote for Romney. If you want somebody that's going to contribute to the end of the culture of death, vote for Santorum.
And if you are going to vote for somebody who's going to make the best president of all the candidates, I say vote for Newt Gingrich, Mark Gray.
And Mark Gray says what?
Newt or Santorum, either one.
All right. Thanks for listening. Next week we'll come in. We'll talk about New Hampshire. We got all kinds of local stuff breaking. Valley Patriot will be on the street no later than Tuesday. Thanks for listening, folks.